Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to the next episode of Nerd Out Sanctuary. I'm sorry, I just looked at my notes and it says 14. It's not episode 14. Episode 14 was the last episode. This episode is episode 15. I don't know what I'm thinking. I'm dyslexic. I don't know what I'm doing. Got a energy drink today, so it's not tea. It's even worse for me. So, hey man, anything to lower that lowers my life expectancy, I'm okay with. No, okay. This has gotten off to a weird start. So yeah, hope you guys are doing well. Hope you guys are keep enjoying my content. This is, again, trying to come out with weekly episodes. I might I already have plans to what to do an episode after that, after this one. So expect one actually pretty soon after the one this one releases. Maybe like, you know, get like two episodes out at once. We'll see how fast we'll discuss that a little bit more at the end of the episode when I close this out. But we got more of my top 100 at the end of this episode, so stick around for that. I'm talking more Ozark since I finished what has been released on Netflix, seasons 2 and 3. I'm gonna just bunch that together into one discussion. So, I mean, I will give a disclaimer. I'm gonna be focusing a little bit more on season 3 since it's more fresher in my mind. I finished it last night, so I'm gonna be talking that. But I mean, I'm still gonna be talking season 2 a little bit. And then we also have a recent film that came out in 2019, which has actually had a decent amount of hype around it, which was surprising, which I'll discuss. So, without further ado, let's get right into it. So let's just start the discussion about Ozark. So wow, wow. Season 2 and 3 are just so good. They're amazing. If you saw my review of the first season, my previous episode, if you watched the first season and you thought that was intense, just wait until you see season 2 and 3. Like, oh my gosh. Like, oh wow. I discussed how Ozark, because of just rumblings of, you know, what was coming ahead. I didn't watch season 2 and 3 at the time of discussing season 1 last episode, but I said that Ozark might be one of the more consistent shows on Netflix, at least on Netflix, maybe of all time. Well, I mean, we'll see. It's only been 3 seasons, but I mean, even then, a lot of shows aren't consistent through 3 seasons. They've either been progressed, or, you know, they're just kind of rising and falling. So we'll see. But I'm pretty confident in saying this is one of the most consistent shows out there right now. I can't pinpoint what season's better, which season is the best. I don't have a favorite. They're all phenomenal. I'm leaning towards season 3 actually being my favorite, but I'll have to think about that a little bit more. Again, these are just kind of my season 3 reaction's a little more visceral since I just finished it last night. I stayed up so late because I wanted to get it done so I can record this today on a Monday. But yeah, let's get into the nitty gritty of the show. So if you thought season 1 has had high stakes, I think season 2 and 3 kind of take it up a notch, especially season 3. The stakes are just, well, like, holy shnikes. I mean, I'm talking, like, dealing with, you know, the head of the Navarro cartel, like, Navarro himself, which is, it just adds a whole other element of, like, this shit's fucking real. Like, shit just gets real, and it, like, ends up just literally being on their doorstep. I mean, it's on their doorstep in season 1, but, like, you're just dealing with Dell in season 1. Granted, this is probably going to be spoilers in season 1. So, I mean, I'm not going to really spoil anything major, any plot points, but, I mean, relatively, you know, just, I'm not going to be immensely careful. But anyway, yeah, season 2 and 3, I mean, you're introduced to some new players. Season 2, primarily, I'm sorry, I dropped my pen. season two, the cartel lawyer, Helen Pierce, shows up, and I'm trying to think of the actress name, but she's really intimidating. I'm not gonna lie. She's probably one of the most intimidating, like, woman performances I've seen in recent memory. I mean, just sort of like a villain who's a female-led, like, villain character in a show like this. I mean, I've never really experienced a more, like, intense, like, if don't fuck up around her or she, yourself are gonna be fucked. So that was pretty crazy. And Ben, the character of Ben added in season three, adds a whole nother level of, like, we're walking on eggshells here because he's kind of a loose cannon character, and he's a wild card. He's the biggest wild card in the entire show, and he's a likable character, and I think the actor has to do a lot, especially at the end of the season. He has to, like, show off a lot of range in his acting performance, and he really brings it. And so does Helen. Helen gets taken to another tier in season three. She's introduced in season two, and she's still there in season three, and she's just, like, she has to do a lot. Instead of not just having this intimidating, like, physical and just, like, emotional presence in the show, she adds a little bit more vulnerability to her performance in season three. She's given a lot more to do in season three, and she brings it with those type of dramatic beats other than just, I'm here to intimidate you and you better not fuck me over or I'm gonna, you know, fucking end you. So, and your entire family. Jason Bateman, I mean, I think all the actors in general bring it. I mean, I think, Julia Gardner, she plays Ruth. She's very consistent. I mean, they're all very consistent, but, like, certain performances such as, Laura Linney and as Wendy, in season three is a particular standout. She is, whoa, she's incredible. probably one of the best dramatic performances out of an actress in a TV show. I don't really keep up with the Emmy nominations, but I know this show is award winning, and I'm pretty sure Jason Bateman has won an Emmy, but I don't know if Laura Linney has. And I think for this season, especially season three, I think she's at least going to get nominated because, whoa. And Jason Bateman as well gives an amazing performance. But, yeah, all actors really bring it. And also in season three, I think the children are a lot less annoying. I mean, Jonah was never really annoying too much. But Charlotte was really, really rough in the first two seasons. And she's a lot better in the third. She, like, she kind of evolves a little bit as a character and starts, you know, kind of really understanding the situation here. It's either you stay or, you know, you die, basically, and that's what it is. So, yeah. But I just kind of want to discuss Bateman's performance and just how unique it is. He was born to play Marty Bird. Like, just the way Bateman acts of, like, you know, always kind of have these, like, deadpan looks, but, like, you can tell, like, his brain is, like, going, like, hardcore, like, high octane, like, power is, like, his brain power could literally power of, like, I don't know, your house, because, like, there's just a lot going on at like, one specific moment, and you can tell in his acting performance. You know, he's like, he tries to be kind of deadpan and not really show too much emotion. And that's part of the character. And then so when he does show emotion, and whether it's anger or sadness or whatever, it really brings that out. It really enhances his performance when he's doing something a little bit more physical or a little bit more emotional in his acting. But even in certain scenes, like there's a scene between him and a little bit of a spoiler alert, the head of the Navarro cartel, Navarro himself, asks him, Marty, what do you want? What do you want, Marty? What do you want? And just like that one line has so much implications at that moment. And you just, and Bateman's performance in that particular scene was very breathtaking to me. And it really, like, it felt like it just sucks all the air out of my room. Not the room. It did in the actual show, but like my room, I was like, holy fuck, Marty, you better really choose your words wisely, because this could go really bad real fast. And so, and there's a lot of moments like that, that like Bateman's performance really enhances the intensity of those sheer dialogue moments, because there's so much at stake. And just, again, with everything about the show that I said was positive in the first, about my first season review, like, you know, directing, you know, cinematography, writing, you know, all those, you know, intros, you know, like the cold opens of every episode, and also the ending tracks that kind of relate to what you just saw in the episode. All of them are here. They're all strong. Like, it's, I mean, they're all, I mean, I would think it started off really well. It started off like a high tier show, high tier production value in the first season, and it stays consistent throughout. I think the only things that really rise are the acting performances, and I think the writers, I think, do an incredible job tying everything together, having things come back from that were mentioned before, and they use, I mean, a lot, I mean, maybe a criticism from the show could be that the birds find very convenient ways on getting out of certain situations. But I would argue those convenient ways that they get out of those situations were set up previously in the series. So that's a testament to just really good writing. So, and also, especially season two and season three, mainly season three, I mean, I guess this is consistent throughout the entire show. The show does a really incredible job of not painting any bad guy or good guy. You know, there's never black or white. There's multiple shades of gray, 50 shades of gray. Okay. I'm sorry for that. Feel free to unsubscribe because I just said that. But anyway, we're going to carry on like that didn't happen. And, there are multiple multi-dimensional characters, or they have multiple layers or whatever, just like Shrek, multiple layers like an onion. And, I mean, especially in season three, like, there's a lot of conflicts, especially with, again, I don't want to spoil anything, but between Marty and Wendy and sort of type of philosophies of how to deal with this whole cartel situation. You know, do we embrace it and move along and try to, you know, build something for ourselves because of this, or do we just get out and run? You see both sides. There's a side where it's just like, you don't want to go any deeper into this, because the deeper we go, the more risk we have with losing our lives, but also you being more useful to the cartel makes you less expendable to him, to the leader, to Navarro. So it's like, it's neither here or there, and they all also, both of them have more selfish motivations to what they're doing as well, which you kind of see the bad side of both situations. And I think, again, the writers do an amazing job, and I think the actors, both Laura Linney and Patrick Bateman, Jason Bateman, not Patrick Bateman for American Psycho, amazing film. Spoiler, you will be seeing that in my top 100. It's pretty high, though. So it's, the writers do an amazing job. I think the guys behind the scenes are fucking incredible. Like, it's, oh yeah, by the way, I actually have physical notes this episode, which is kind of neat. I got printer ink. But I know I sing the show's praises a lot, and I just don't really have a lot of criticisms of the show. I really don't. I mean, in season three, the whole Charlotte situation's fixed, and I think was actually turned into a positive. I think especially the relationship between Jonah and Charlotte was so relatable to me. It was so relatable, like how, you know, both of them having no control over the situation that their parents put them through, and they bond over that, and their connection with one another and their familial bond with one another is so strong. And it reminds me so much of my relationship with my own sister. And it was just, there was a particular moment in season three where they're both like sitting on the trampoline together, like laying on the trampoline together, like discussing a particular day that went down, and you know, Jonah's thinking about the bad things, but Charlotte, you know, tells him, well, think about the good things that happened today, because there were good things that happened to Jonah that day. And you know, it was a really awesome moment, really small, you know, kind of insignificant to the story moment, but important thematically with the characters and helping my emotional investment with the kids. And it's just like, oh, you know, I've been through this. I mean, obviously, you know, my family was never indebted to a fucking drug cartel, obviously, but I mean, we all have familial problems, and whether that's, you know, good or bad for your own familial family unit. And you know, luckily I've been so lucky to have a family that is amazing, and I would do anything for them. And yeah, it just reminded me a lot of that and added a lot of positivity to a lot of negativity in the show that you watch. I think maybe that would probably be my one criticism, is there's just like, it can get so intense all the time. You know, sometimes it's, you kind of need a little bit more, some moments to just breathe a little bit, and they're there, but I, you know, sometimes it's like, okay, you know, it kind of takes away from the, you know, I guess the bingeability of the show. But I mean, again, it's not really a criticism at all. I mean, it's me nitpicking and trying not to be such a, you know, biased asshole. But anyway, yeah, everything about the show is amazing. I would argue it's, if not the best Netflix original, it's one of the best. It's one of the most consistent shows on any platform right now. I mean, if you look at other shows on Netflix, like I said before in my season one review, like House of Cards kind of falls off, especially the very last season, kind of sucked. I mean, again, it wasn't particularly the show's fault, but you know, it is what it is. You know, I think Orange is the New Black is, I never really got into it because I think the main character just sucks. Stranger Things, you kind of see a actual kind of downward trend of kind of fall off. I mean, I'm not saying the show sucks. I'm just saying the first season was so good. Second season was kind of needed to move along faster. But I mean, the last two episodes of season two are probably the best episodes of Stranger Things. And I think the third season was good, but not great. I mean, it was a good time, but I mean, like, it just kind of does the same thing that the first two seasons did. So I don't know what they're going to do with the fourth season. And so, I mean, like, there's other shows on there, but I mean, I think Ozark is just consistently, it's getting better over time, and that's a sign of a really spectacular show. So yeah, if you haven't already checked out Ozark, I implore you to. I mean, it is so good, especially at a time like this where we're all cooped up in our own houses or apartments. I mean, there's nothing better to do. And I'll tell you right now, you'll get invested. And check out the first episode, you'll be hooked. Instantly, you'll be hooked. The first episode of this series is one of the best pilots I've ever seen, ever. So, also, the endings of every season are pretty fucking insane. So just be prepared to have your mind blown at the end of every season. But yeah, Ozark, check it out. It's fucking incredible. So yeah, moving on with my physical notes. I'm so glad I have a physical copy of my notes, so I don't have to keep looking at my laptop. But yeah, moving on to our film review today. I just watched Uncut Gems. Yeah, I was a little late to this party. Surprisingly, very popular. I mean, a lot of people that I know, like my friends and family that I know, have seen Uncut Gems. It's very weird. I'm like, it's an A24 film, which is more of like, they helm films that are a little bit more obscure or classified as indie, even though they're really not indie. They have very high production value, but they're just, you know, they're not mainstream films, and neither is this one. This is fits right into that category, high production value, but not mainstream at all. So I was kind of happy, though, because I love A24. If you are unfamiliar with the movie film studio of A24, I mean, they've produced movies like Hereditary, The Lighthouse recently, Green Room, Lady Bird, The Disaster Artist, Swiss Army Man, Ex Machina, Good Time, which is a previous film of these filmmakers who made Uncut Gems, which I'll talk about a little bit, Enemy, and Moonlight. Moonlight won Best Picture. I forget the year it came out. But yeah, and a lot of other movies. But I think those were like the main ones that I saw, the main reason ones that I saw when I looked A24 movies up. And I've seen all of them. I'll be that guy. All these films are amazing. So yeah. Yeah, I mean, they mainly do horror films and dramas, and this kind of definitely fits. This is just a very intense film. And if you're unfamiliar with Uncut Gems, it's about, let me just read the synopsis for you. With his debts mounting and angry collectors closing in, a fast-talking New York City jeweler risks everything in hopes of staying afloat and staying alive. It stars Adam Sandler, which is crazy, and I'll be talking about him later. The directors and writers are the Safdie brothers, Benny and Josh Safdie. If you're unfamiliar with them, if you've ever saw a film called Good Time, starring Robert Pattinson, they were responsible for that film, and that film is incredible, and it's very similar to this one. Very, very intense. Like holy crap film that never is very relentless. It never stops. It's always very intense throughout. Like, you're gonna have high blood pressure while watching this film. Like, it's very intense. Another thing that the Safdie brothers do incredibly well, I'm a fan of theirs. I really like Good Time, and I really like this film, spoilers with my thoughts, but Good Time and this one have very similar qualities. Like I said, very intense film. It almost feels like I'm doing cocaine or some type of psychedelic drugs that make me hyper paranoid and like just makes you very like on edge. And it's mainly dealing with their directing style and the way they write dialogue. They do this really unique thing that I've never really experienced either in TV or film, is that they somehow, like, they have multiple characters talking over each other at once. And it puts you very on edge and like very like, okay, this is very chaotic. And that's really hard to do, especially as a writer. I mean, if you really pay attention to, like, your films that you watch, your TV shows, usually only one character is talking at one time. Usually. Because if a lot of multiple characters are, you know, talking at once, it's very incoherent. But the Safdie brothers do it so well that it enhances the experience that they're trying to give you, which is a very intense, you know, relentless type of experience that takes a hold of you and just shakes you for 2 hours, basically. That's pretty much how I would describe watching a Safdie Brothers film. Which isn't a bad feeling, but that kind of adds to a little bit of criticism that I have. I mean, of both Good Time and Cut Gems. Both of them are fantastic films. They both are. But, like, the rewatchability of both of them, I think this one's a little more rewatchable than Good Time. Because Good Time, I mean, they both follow characters that are trying to do the right sort of right thing, but also kind of shitty people, you know? So they're not very relatable, but, like, you kind of understand what they're doing and why they're doing the things that they are doing. And sometimes you just don't understand why they're doing that thing. Maybe they're just kind of pieces of shit. But, I mean, that also kind of adds to, like, the tragedy of both of the films, because both of the films do also end in a similar thematic way. But yeah, I mean, it just kind of takes away the rewatchability of both of the films and kind of makes them suffer. I mean, not they're both phenomenal films, and they're both films that I will recommend. But like, I would buy them to revisit them and maybe show other people. But like, I never feel like, oh, I'm gonna watch Good Time tonight. I'm gonna watch Good Time tonight. I'm gonna, you know, have a potential heart attack and, you know, watch this shitty dude go through awful shit. But yeah. But that's probably my only legitimate criticism I have of this one, which is what I had with Good Time, is that I think the rewatchability is just not quite there as opposed to some other films. But I'd also kind of want to just... I want to discuss Adam Sandler for a bit. Is hands down the best part of this film. Adam Sandler gives... I mean, again, I'm very late to this party, but so I've seen pretty much every film that has come out in 2019, and I'll be discussing something that I'm going to be doing for next episode at the end of this episode with that. But I looked back at the Oscar nominations for Best Male Lead in a Film, and he wasn't nominated, and I'm like... I remember saying on a previous podcast that I had that I wasn't upset with the picks for the 2020 Oscar nominations. Yeah, I changed my opinion because this performance was one of the best of the year. I think other than Joaquin Phoenix and Joker, he was the best. Fact. He's incredible. Like, he's incredible. I mean, it's kind of crazy how a lot of comedians... have a lot of dramatic acting chops. You know, your Robert Williams, Jim Carrey, now Adam Sandler. A lot of them have a lot of really good dramatic, you know, acting chops. And I think here it really gets put on display. He's so good. I mean, he's doing a lot physically. I mean, he's kind of... He puts his Adam Sandler, like... touch to the character of Howard Ratner. Howard. But it blows my mind that he wasn't nominated, because he was just so mind-blowing in this one, and he makes the film, and he also he adds so much intensity because of his performance being actually very, very subtle too. I mean, it's eccentric a lot at times, but when it's subtle, there's a lot of range, and there's a lot that Anna Sandler has to do in this film. There's so much he has to do, so it blows my mind how good Adam Sandler was, and it really adds to the film. But does it have the movie magic? Does Uncut Gems have the movie magic, though? The Mikey's movie magic? Yeah, it definitely does. I think this and Good Time definitely do. Very, very good film. I mean, I would have to really think about it, and I'll definitely be revisiting this one for sure over time, because I just love films and I love experiences like this one. But, I mean, I think for the more average moviegoer might not enjoy this one as much as I would, since I'm a huge avid film fan. And I was actually looking at the Rotten Tomatoes score for this one, and it's a very large gap between the critic rating and the audience score on Rotten Tomatoes. The tomato meter score, the critic rating, is 92%, which I definitely get. But then the audience score is a 52%. I mean, that's a 40% difference. That's a lot. So, but I also kind of understand. I mean, these A24 films aren't the most accessible movies of all time. They don't really connect with a mainstream audience as much as, you know, an Avengers movie or a Disney movie would, obviously. But that's not a bad thing. I mean, if you like good films and, you know, you're struggling to, you know, find something to watch, I would definitely check this one out because it is a really good movie and it's really well made. It's incredibly well made. The Safdie brothers are very talented filmmakers. Love their synths in their musical scores. I will tell you that. They love using synth-themed soundtracks, which is very cool. I mean, it's very awesome. It adds a very weird type of like thematic element to it, I guess. I'm using the word thematic a lot. But yeah, I would love to see them write and direct a sci-fi film. I feel like that would be really interesting. That'd be very crazy. I'm really looking forward to seeing what the Safdie brothers do next because their two films that I've checked out have been pretty great. And especially if they're I'm pretty sure they're the first like feature films that they've made that have been big. So I'm really looking forward to following their careers and seeing what they do next. Because this was really good. Uncut Gems is very good. But I understand why a normal, you know, moviegoer wouldn't like this one. It's a type of experience that if you don't like really like sheer intensity the entire runtime, maybe you can skip it, but I wouldn't recommend skipping this one. This one is really good. So yeah. Uncut Gems. That's that. Oh, okay, my computer is being weird again, but I'm transitioning, so gives me time to cut this one up, and also give my chance to tell you to subscribe, and if you don't know, this is, you know, obviously Nerd Out Sanctuary Pod, it's a podcast, it's a video podcast, so if you're just listening on audio platforms, I'm also a YouTube channel, so I'd appreciate you checking this channel out. If you, you know, don't want to just listen to it, this is also a video podcast, and I clip every episode up to make it like certain clips, so you can just watch like a part of an episode if you don't want to watch the full thing. Also, if you're checking me out on YouTube, this is also an audio podcast, so if you're just like, you know, in your car or you're running or whatever you're doing and you're not at, you know, your computer or, you know, phone or whatever to watch a video, I'm on Spotify, I'm on iTunes, and I'm on Google Play. So the big three podcast platforms that you can find me on, I'm on there. So I appreciate if you subscribe, give me a like, whatever, comment below, I will respond to you. I will respond to you. So even if it's negative, I will respond to you. I have nothing else better to do with my time. You don't know. I have nothing else better to do with my time than this. I'm not working right now, clearly. So, but I have a feeling I will be pretty soon. So we'll see about that. But without further ado, let's get into my next five in my top 100. We're talking 85 through 81, but before I get into my list of my next five, I like to put out a disclaimer before I talk about these five films. All of these films have the movie magic. All of them are really great. They're my favorite films of all time, so they all have the movie magic to me. I'm not going to give an in-depth review on each of them. This is just a list, and also this is not objective fact. This is not, oh, these are the 100 best films of all time, period. No, they're my five favorite films of all time, and they're not my five, my 100 favorite films of all time. They're the 100 movies that I go back to a lot. So, yeah, this is my opinion, and if you don't like it, fuck off. I don't care. But, so let's just get into it. So, number 85, we have M. Night Shyamalan's The Sixth Sense. Yes, number 85, The Sixth Sense. I mean, we're talking one of the most iconic twists of all time. If you don't know what it is, you've been living under a rock. I don't even know why you're watching this, but M. Night Shyamalan, it's one of the first, I think it is the first feature film of M. Night Shyamalan. It's what put M. Night on the map. However you feel about M. Night Shyamalan. I personally love M. Night Shyamalan. I think his career is incredibly fascinating, and he has made some of my favorite films of all time. And I put out a video on the Unbreakable trilogy and why I love it. It's one of my first episode of my Why I Love series, which is a very it's a very exclusive episode that will only happen very rarely, but it's about certain topics that I'm heavily passionate about, and I was heavily passionate about the Unbreakable trilogy because Unbreakable is very high on this particular top 100 list. So, love M. Night Shyamalan. I love The Sixth Sense. It's one of the best horror films of all time. It also has amazing dramatic elements. I think it's really not underrated. It's not an underrated film. I mean, it has like 86% on Rotten Tomatoes and a 90% audience score. So it's great. If you're unfamiliar with The Sixth Sense, I mean, it's about, you know, a kid who sees dead people. And Bruce Willis helps him out with that. I don't know why you don't know. But so will this rise or fall? I think, if anything, this movie has a chance to rise, because I love M. Night so much. This is not going to drop out of my list. I will say that now. But it's not my favorite. It's my third favorite Shyamalan film of all time. So, yeah. I don't think it's really going to rise too much, if it ever does. But it's definitely not falling. So, with that, the next film, number 84, we have Scarface. Take a look at my little friend! Like, I mean, come on. I mean, it's amazing. It's another iconic mob film. I mean, we're talking one of Al Pacino's best performances ever. Iconic lines. Yo, Coco Roach. Like, I mean, come on now. It's such a great film. And I mean, I also saw this at a pretty young age, so there's a lot of nostalgia with this one, oddly enough. It's very weird because it's such a violent and like drug-filled experience, and it's just so insane. It's pure insanity. But like, I don't know, the time it came with, the time period, and just the style of the film with the performances and the iconic nature of Scarface, it had to be in here. It had to be in my top 100. It had to be somewhere, and it's number 84. Will this rise ever? Possibly. Will this fall? Probably not. I'm kind of getting into the point where I'm not really, I don't think any movies are really going to be falling anytime soon. So we'll see here. But number 83, one of the more critically acclaimed films and one of the more classic films on here, Martin Scorsese's Taxi Driver. That's right, Taxi Driver. Probably, I don't know if I want to say my favorite Robert De Niro performance, but probably my favorite Robert De Niro performance. The only thing that's keeping this one from being higher is just, I don't really rewatch this one as much as the other ones, but I mean, it is a very classic film, and it's one of my, it's amazing. I mean, Robert De Niro's probably my favorite Robert De Niro performance, and just a classic Scorsese film. It's classic. I mean, a lot of people think that the whole, you talking to me? Like, that whole thing, it's not from Goodfellas, it's not from The Godfather, it's from Taxi Driver. So, get it right, guys. Will this ever rise? Probably not, because I don't really rewatch this one a lot, and I don't revisit it as much as a lot of other films on this big list. But, will it fall? Possibly, but I don't think so. I mean, it's such a classic film. And when I'm in the mood to watch Taxi Driver, I have to watch it. That is rare. So, moving on to another film that has one of the most rewatchability factors in this list, and that's number 82, Mad Max Fury Road. I think it's probably the most recent release so far in my revealed top 100 list. But I think as soon as I saw this one, I'm like, this is one of my favorite films of all time. I mean, I think if someone would come up to me and be like, Mad Max Fury Road is the best action film of all time, I'd be like, it's not a bad opinion. I'm not going to argue with you. I mean, it is. It's one of the best action films of all time. It's one of the most, awe-inspiring moments in film. Like, there's so many moments while watching that you're just like, how the fuck did you do that? How'd you put that on camera? What? Like, the practicality of the effects in this film are insane. Along with it being the most metal as fuck film I have ever seen. I mean, there's the Doof Warrior, bro. I mean, there's a guy on top of a monster truck playing a guitar that has flames coming out of it. Like, bro, like, you don't get more metal than that. I mean, I think, if anything, this film has a chance to rise in my list. I mean, it is high because I love it so much, but I think it will be higher because it is a recent release. I mean, it came out, what, 5 years ago? Around 5 years ago? I think it came out in 2015. So it's definitely a lot more recent than some other films on this list. But, I mean, there's other films on this list that are higher that are even more recent. But anyway, so the final film that I will be revealing today is number 81, and that is Superbad. One of my best friends' favorite film. Shout out to you, Sam. But Superbad, number 81. Probably one of the best comedic coming of age stories I've ever seen. And if you're looking back on it, like, some, like, really big actors are in here. Like, you know, Jonah Hill, Michael Cera, Emma Stone, Bill Hader, Seth Rogen. Like, some really huge names are in here. Christopher Mintz-Plasse is also, I mean, McLovin, an iconic character. I mean, all three of them. It's just an iconic film. And now, I mean, I'm trying to think when it came out. I want to say, like, 20... Does it give me a year? 2007. Wow. Okay. It's a little bit older than I thought. But yeah, one of the funniest films I've ever seen. And again, one of the most relatable films of all time I've ever seen. But I remember, you know, when I reviewed Big Time Adolescence, I was kind of expecting a little bit more comedy and more relatability, like in Superbad, because it kind of had a Superbad type of feel to it. But none of that Superbad relatability, which kind of plays into the humor, like, comedic aspect to it. Like, if it's relatable, it makes it more funny, and that's what Big Time Adolescence didn't have, but this one does, and on every single level, and it has amazing performances that are just hilarious. I mean, yeah. Will this ever rise? Possibly, because it's definitely one of my favorite comedies of all time, and it also has a chance to fall because it is a comedy, and comedies are not my favorite genre in film, but because it's really hard to make a really good comedy, and this is a really good comedy. So I think it has more of a chance to rise in my list than fall, but yeah. So yeah, guys, that's my next 5, 85 through 81 in my top 100, and with that's kind of the episode. I think we have a little bit of a shorter one for you today. I think it's below 50 minutes, but I'll try to sped it. I'll try to get the time up to 50 minutes, but look, I don't want to, like, just talk just randomly, but yeah. That's it for the episode 15, guys. Expect another episode coming pretty soon, though. At the end of these episodes, you know, I like to give a sort of, like, message at the end of every one of these, and that's, it's okay to not be okay. You know, everyone's dealing with a lot right now, but I think, things are gonna get better. Things have gotten better for me. Some things that were giving me stress kind of resolved themselves, or I got them resolved, and I think I'm gonna be going back to work sooner rather than later. I mean, I'm pretty sure, so we'll see. But, it's just try to stay positive. I know it's hard sometimes, especially when you're surrounded by negativity and a lot of negative things are happening to you, but just know that those negative things usually aren't permanent, and that you can use those negative things and turn them into positive things and use them as personal growth moments and, you know, taking bad things and trying to mew the good things that are also happening around you. So, yeah. Guys, that's pretty much it for the episode. Like I said before, expect another episode coming pretty soon. We'll see about that. I don't know what's going to happen with me if I get lazy or something like that, but I don't think so. Next episode, I might take a break with my top 100 list, and I think I'm going to do my top 10 of 2019, top 10 films that came out in 2019, and I don't want to do two lists in one episode, so I might just take a little break from my top 100. I know that might upset some of you, but I think I've seen pretty much every film that I wanted to see in 2019, and I kind of, it's late, I know, it's the end of April, and like, I'm giving you a list on top 10 films of 2019, which was 4 months ago, but I mean, it's better late than never, so expect that. I'm probably going to be reviewing another film that possibly might be on that list, because I think I have one more that I really want to see before I create that list, so I'll review that next, and I'll probably try to check out another film for you guys. And, yeah, that's this episode, episode 15. Look out for episode 16 coming soon. And, yeah, that's pretty much it, guys. 45 minutes. It's a short one. And next one will probably be a little bit of a shorter one. But I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what I want to do. And, yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed this. You know, it's, I think I'm getting a little bit better. You know, I'm not as, you know, nervous doing this stuff. So, yeah, I'm going to keep doing this. Even when I go back to work, I'm not stopping this. They're just going to be a little bit more sporadic. Yeah, I'm not going to be not doing this. So, yeah. Yeah, I love all you guys. I appreciate all you guys who are checking me out, you know, subscribing, commenting. I appreciate that, the support that you guys saw, some of you guys are giving me. I really appreciate it. And if you're watching, I would appreciate you subscribing, liking a video, or subscribing on iTunes or wherever. And yeah, I appreciate your support and keep it coming. I would really appreciate it. And yeah, guys, that's it. So, be careful out there, stay safe, times like this, wear a fucking mask, you know, when you go to a store, wear a fucking mask. I mean, when I went to the store, I think, last night I went to Target, and they require you to have a mask when you walk in, I guess, but I mean, when I was walking out, there was fucking thoughts having no mask, and I was just like, what is this, where's your mask? It's not just for yourself, it's for everyone else around you. So, yeah. Don't be an idiot. Be safe. Be considerate to others. And, yeah, just be careful. And I'll see you guys on the next episode of Nerd Out Sanctuary. Bye.